The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome into Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and I'm joined by my two co-hosts today, Dre Oldenburg and Nathan Gladwell. We got some Alabama and Auburn football recruiting to go over, and then we're going to go into a heavy, heavy deep dive into the NBA. You had the NBA draft this past week. The free agency opened. You had some trades happening, signings happening all over the league. So we'll go into that. But first, let's start out with some Alabama football recruiting. Nathan, what do you have for us on that end?
Well, it's been pretty heavy, and honestly, the future's bright. I have been super impressed with what Kalen and the board have been able to do these past few weeks, especially through the month of June and then going into July. I think the biggest for me, Keelan Russell flipping from SMU to Alabama, that it looks like the quarterback of the future. You look at the QB11 camp. I mean, he was insane. He won the MVP for it. So he's been on a burner so far. And then picking up a recent commitment from cornerback Dejon Lee. He's been great. And then some other predictions for several different five stars. But the future looks very, very bright, up to number two in national recruiting, just behind Ohio State, which has a plethora of five stars already committed to him. But I think the biggest for me, you look at a wide receiver and Caleb Cunningham, five star out of Ackerman, Mississippi, 6'1", 190 pounds. He looks to be very, very good. I've appreciated what Jamarcus Russell has been able to do as a wide receiver here so far. I feel like he's a big target for some of the recruits coming in. Another guy I'm excited about, Keelock Lockett out of Texas, another five-star wide receiver. He's been on Alabama's radar for a while. And with some of their friends committing over the past few days and past month, I felt like they have leaned towards Alabama more often than not, especially with Caleb Cunningham picking up a recent prediction back on June 23rd from two different analysts who have very good accuracy when it comes to stuff like that. So I think Caleb Cunningham is probably one of the pieces that is more likely to commit within the next month. I forget if he has set a commitment date or not. But as far as wide receivers go, Alabama has had no trouble picking them up. It's going to be very interesting, especially with this year, to see what a guy named Jamarcus Russell can do with Ryan Williams and see how Alabama does as a whole. But I think the defense, you look at the defense, you think it would have suffered a lot more with what all Alabama lost. You talk about Kyle Downs leaving. You talk about the defensive coaches leaving. Tarvarius Robinson. I mean, it's all looked so bad at the beginning, but now you look at it and it's just like, why did we overreact like we did? Alabama recruiting has been fine. Kalen DeBoer has really impressed me with what he's done. And honestly, I don't know why anyone expected Alabama to fall off a cliff when it came to recruiting, because at the end of the day, it's the brand that makes the game. And Alabama has one of the biggest brands out there.
So great, flipping over to Auburn here. I've noticed they've been picking up recruit after recruit. I know they had a recent decommit, but they did steal Alvin Henderson, the running back that was committed to Ole Miss. So what is Hugh Freeze done on the recruiting trail for the Tigers?
Look, it's so early in the recruiting trail right now. With it being just into July right now, it is really starting to pick up. You know, visit season is happening. You know, a lot of these teams will host their cookouts, so their weekends where they get all their recruits back. And then players will start to go ahead and schedule their visits for the games this upcoming season. And it is a long, long road until December. And I think Hugh Freeze, you know, not just so far in this 2025 recruiting class, what he did in the 2023 and 2024, right when he came in and when he had his first full class, was show that nothing is over in June. Nothing is over in July. You know, his top four commitments in 2023 were all flips. His top five commitments in 2024 were all flips from other schools. And all of them happened late in the year. And so I think that's one thing that Auburn fans need to keep in mind. But Auburn has been on a tear in the recruiting rankings, at least considering what Auburn dealt with for the past 10 years before Hugh Freeze, with Gus Malzahn and Brian Harsin. It was just not good. It was not consistent, especially on the offensive line. Hugh Freeze has done an outstanding job so far on the offensive line in this 2025 class, getting a 4-star offensive tackle, Broderick Shull, a couple weeks ago, got 4-star offensive tackle, Tavares Rice, also getting a guy like Ty Buster and Spencer Downland. I mean, building up the trenches is absolutely huge, especially to compete in the SEC. And I think that's where Hugh Freeze is, you know, starting this off, but then having, you know, some really good in-state commitments, guys like Alvin Henderson, who flipped from Penn State, just like you mentioned, Alex, Eric Winters, the second most recent commit to Alvin Henderson, from Enterprise, Alabama. It's an in-state safety. Malik Autry, obviously right in your backyard at Opelika High School. He's going to be a 5-star defensive tackle, and then keep building through this state and around the Southeast. That's where Brian Harsin, that's where Gus Malzahn really, really struggled to keep the talent gap between Auburn's opponents and Auburn small enough for Auburn to win. Hugh Freeze has shown he has come in and already started to close that gap between the Alabamas and Georgias and Clemsons and Ohio States and Florida's, the team that were just steal the recruits from before. I think it's huge. You know, you talked about Alvin Henderson, Alex. Alvin Henderson is a guy that, you know, has been in love with being on Auburn's campus, being in the facility since he was a sophomore in high school, had a great relationship with Carnell Williams before he was let go. And then when Cadillac was fired and they parted ways and Auburn brought in Coach Derek Nix, Nix knew that he was a top priority, being the top running back in the state of Alabama, knowing that Auburn did not get a running back commit from this past season, or from the past cycle in 2024, they knew that that was a huge priority, and getting him to flip back from Penn State and to help on the recruiting trail moving forward, I think it's a big deal. Talking about some players that I think Auburn is in really good positions for, maybe a commit next, a guy like Blake Woodby, his teammate Bryce Deese committed on their official visit together a couple weeks ago, the 4-star athlete. He's a 4-star cornerback, number 8 cornerback in the On3 industry rankings, number 2 player in Maryland. That would be a really good get. And then another guy who is committing, that we know is committing in late July, is Anquan Fagans, another in-state safety from Thompson, running this recruiting cycle through the state of Alabama and around the state is how Auburn is going to have success moving forward.
Yeah, so a lot of recruiting going on with Alabama and Auburn. But like Gray touched on when he's talking with Auburn, it's not over yet. Don't be over in December. You have a transfer portal. That'll be hitting there pretty hard. So we'll be covering that as that happens throughout the offseason and into the season and the next offseason. Moving on to the NBA here, guys. Before we get into the NBA draft and I just disappear, fade away from existence.
I don't know, Gray might as well.
Yeah. The Detroit Pistons hired former Cleveland Cavaliers head coach J.B. Bickerstaff to be the team's next head coach, filling the last head coach opening in the NBA. Guys, do you think the Pistons made the right decision here hiring Bickerstaff over somebody like Mike Inouye from the Timberwolves?
Alex, I told you last week when we were on this show and when we were talking about the Monty Williams, you know, the firing and then bailing ship, you know, right now, I was like, you know what the Pistons need to go do? They need to go out and find a coach is not only really good, sound, defensive mind head coach, but a coach that has experience in developing young talent, especially at the guard position and with Caleb Cunningham and Jaden Ivey on the Pistons.
Hey, Cunningham, Caleb Cunningham.
What is?
I know we're just on Caleb Cunningham.
Yeah, Caleb Cunningham. Whatever. What is this? That's not J.B. Bickerstaff is not that guy. In no way, in no fashion at all.
Not giving him credit for Darius Garland?
No. Oh. Credit for Darius Garland.
What about Isaac Okoro? I know he's really good right now.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, gosh. We haven't even got to the draft yet, and we're already flipping out.
I'm sorry. It just NBA franchises continuing to watch one team had to deal with one coach who just has no success whatsoever. They fire them. And then the coach is like, oh, it's a hot commodity. We got to go ahead and pick him up. And then J.B. Bickerstaff goes and he goes to Cleveland. And what does Cleveland do? Absolutely nothing. Darius Garland, I mean, just runs around the court at the time. I haven't even seen him do anything in the postseason. And then, you know, he leaves. Oh, Pistons, they're right up next. And it's the same thing with Doc Rivers, too. The number of times he's lost game sevens, it's a historical number. Yet, I mean, he's the best thing available. He's over there on TV and people want to pick him up. I don't understand.
It's definitely something to go from Monty Williams to JB Bickerstaff. Not saying it's an upgrade or a downgrade. It's just Detroit Pistons cannot hire a head coach to save their lives. Stan Van Gundy, I mean, the list goes on and on and on. They need the ghost of Chuck Daly to come save their franchise because, good Lord, it is not very good.
Oh, Ben Wallace is coming back?
Speaking of not very good franchises, let's move on to the NBA draft here. Y'all are going to have to help me get through this because, like I said, I might
just go ahead and take a deep breath, Alex. Go ahead and take a deep breath.
So with the first overall pick, the Atlanta Hawks, I was really excited to see what they were going to do here, if they were going to trade out, pick Alex Saar, Reed Shepard, Donovan Klingon, something to help this team right now. I was sorely mistaken because Landry Fields goes out and drafts Zachary Richesay, first overall from France. And when that pick happened, I sat in front of the TV for about a solid hour and just stared. Not a thought behind my eyes, just blank staring at the TV, trying to figure out where I went wrong in life, choosing to go for the Atlanta Hawks and how I can fix the pain I feel. Because as we'll touch on it after we get done with the NBA draft, it just got worse for me throughout the weekend. Like, it has got... I just can't do it anymore.
He's already done.
Get it out of the way, Alex. Just get it out of the way. Get it out of the way. Let's talk about all the Hawks did first.
Hey, you just want to go get clean sweep here?
Yeah, clean sweep with the Hawks. Clean sweep with the Hawks.
Okay, so
the Hornets and Thunder.
Okay, so the Atlanta Hawks, like I said, draft Zachary Richesay first overall over guys like Alex Saar, Reed Shepard, Klingon, who they were considering. And then they go out and they trade AJ Griffin, who they drafted in the first round a few years ago, to the Houston Rockets for the 44th overall pick, and then ended up trading that pick to get the rights to Nikola Jokic, which is the 43rd overall pick from Miami Heat. And, you know, they basically traded AJ Griffin, which I believe was a lottery pick, for a second round pick from a guy that played overseas. Not saying he's going to be bad. It's just AJ Griffin, I thought, was very good, fit Trae Young's play style a lot, good 3-point shooter, never got a chance in Atlanta. And that really was not the worst thing that happened, because it just, my weekend, I was out at a remote for my new job, and then I see this come up on my phone on ESPN. The Atlanta Hawks trade DeJounte Murray to the New Orleans Pelicans for a bag of air and two loose pennies. No, they traded him for Larry Nance Jr., EJ Liddell, Dyson Daniels, and two first round picks. The two picks being the Lakers 2025 first rounder and the least favorable 2027 first rounder from the Pelicans or the Bucks. So, safe to say I did not have a great weekend as a sports fan.
Yeah.
Like I said, I was just sitting in front of the TV during the draft trying to figure out where I went wrong. And then when that came up on my phone, I just sat there at the remote, just in awe of what Landry Fields does as a GM, going to Stanford, having that type of degree, and then basically running a franchise that made the conference finals right into the ground.
I don't understand where the Hawks are going here.
From an outsider
perspective, I look at every single thing that they did over the past week, drafting Richesay, or however you say his name, who averaged like 4 points over in France.
Actually, he averaged like 11, but that doesn't make it any better.
Wow, barely ever done religion. Look at that.
France.
First overall.
Getting rid of AJ Griffin, who I thought was a tremendous young talent and one of the bright spots on this Atlanta team. Not, you know, I'm not saying that he was unbelievable this past year. I'm saying looking into the future, AJ Griffin was, in my mind, a piece of that Atlanta Hawks team. But to get rid of him completely, you know, go for a second round pick, And then the DeJounte Murray trade, I kind of figured that they were going to trade either DeJounte Murray or Trae Young. Recently, it did look like it was DeJounte Murray.
Couldn't even get Trey Murphy.
Or Herb Jones. They got Larry Nance, EJ Liddell. I do like the Dyson Daniels pickup. I think that's the best pickup of the whole trade for the Hawks.
Yay,
that's sad. Dyson that's Daniels. Very sad.
It's a young guard. That's about all you can say about him. And two very mediocre first round picks. I don't see where they're going with this one.
Just wanted to be known, the Hawks do not own their future either. They traded their next three first round picks to the Spurs.
The Hawks have dug their own grave. I mean, first of all, you go back, 2018 draft where they traded away Luka for Trey on draft night. And then
Cam Reddish.
And Cam Reddish. And then you sit there and we're now in 2024. It's been a solid 6 years. And other than Western Conference Finals appearance, you haven't really done anything else in the postseason. Not a lot of success. You kind of stalled out. And then you have two good options. You have a guy in Trae Young who definitely has a good bit of value, especially on the offensive end. And then you have a very clutch player in DeJounte Murray, which really has a great two-way game. And you decide to trade the better one away. I'm sorry. I would have traded away Trae Young in a heartbeat and see whatever you could have got for him. But to make it worse, the package they got for DeJounte Murray, especially we'll talk about the Mikal Bridges trade here a little bit. You look at that package compared to what they got for DeJounte Murray. And you're just like, did you even try to negotiate? Did you talk to people? Or did the Pelicans just like throw something at you? And you're like, okay, we'll take it. It's good enough. Because that's what it seems like. Trae Murphy. If y'all could have gotten Trae Murphy, that would have been he's a great role player. And having watched in the past few seasons, he has just excelled in everything he's done on the offensive end, but he's also improved tremendously on the defensive end. But you don't get him. Larry Nance Jr., how much longer is he going to be a viable piece in the league? That's my biggest question. Is Dyson Daniels going to pan out as a prospect? I know. And then you got Dyson Daniels, and I have not seen that man do anything good when he's played for the Pelicans. Garbage time, he's even looked bad. And then to only get two first round picks and for them to be pretty mediocre, that pretty much sums it up for a guy in DeJounte Murray, which I think has incredible value. I mean, what a steal for the Pelicans. I don't think they're done making moves either. I think the Pelicans want to go ahead and try to contend now. So we'll probably end up having news with them. But for the Hawks just to kind of be in limbo for the past few years, I'm sure it's killing Alex. I think he might die
slowly.
Here soon.
Very, slowly. Very slowly.
Yeah, he's getting hit to death with a club right now. I don't see where the Hawks go here in the future. I mean, how many more years are you going to give Trae Young to be the franchise player he needs to be and lead you to another Western Conference Finals appearance or a final appearance?
Nathan, you know where the Hawks are going?
I would love to know.
The play-in?
Oh, is that? Okay, that makes a lot more sense because I've seen the Hawks in the play-in like every single year.
Yeah, let me break this. let me just break this down. Think one thing at a time. Zachary Richardson, first overall. I don't agree with the pick. The fit with Trae Young makes somewhat sense because Trae Young, we all know, is not a great defender, and Richardson has a lot of length and is a very good perimeter defender. He was overseas in France. He was an above average 3-point shooter. He started out the year shooting almost 50% from three, then tapered off towards the end of the season shooting about 30. So he averaged about 40% from three, which is a pretty good number. And that's something you want to have around Trae Young is somebody that can shoot a three ball. Thing that worries me is he's very, very skinny. He is not a good finisher at the rim, which Trae Young, we all know, loves to throw lobs to his teammates. So if he lacks that strength, we've seen players in the past, Chet Holmgren last playoffs, even though he did play really good when it came to blocking shots, we saw him get abused due to his lean frame and lack of strength. And I think Zachary Richardson is more of a developmental prospect. His ceiling, according to a lot of people, is a high-level role player. Drafting that first overall as a team that's wanting to try to appears to be wanting to contend somewhat now makes no sense when you have somebody like Alex Saar sitting there or having the ability to trade the pick to like a San Antonio Spurs and get your picks back or trade later, trade down later and get somebody like a Rob Dillingham, who I think is more of an immediate help to your team than somebody like Richichet is. So I'm not a huge fan of the pick. I hope he pans out. I see the fit with Trae Young. It's just first overall, no, makes no sense. Atlanta, then trading AJ Griffin. I've loved AJ Griffin being on the Hawks. It just felt like when Snyder didn't prioritize playing him, Griffin dealt with injuries throughout his tenure there, and he just had to go. I hated that he had to go. It makes sense because he's going to have to be due for a contract extension in the next couple of seasons, so they wanted to get off that, get what they could right now. And then the DeJounte Murray trade. There's really no rationalizing this for me. When, like Ethan mentioned, you see the Mikal Bridges package he got. We're going to go over here in a few minutes. And getting somebody like Larry Nance Jr., who was on a one-year deal, probably won't resign him. He'll walk after a year. EJ Liddell, who I don't know if he'll be a factor. He might get released for all I know. And then somebody like Dyson Daniels, who I think has great potential. He was drafted off his potential. But he is an extremely ineffective shooter. And he's been working with one of the better shooting coaches in the league in New Orleans. So that's a big red flag for me. He provides a lot defensively, but how much defense do you provide to where your offense is just like, what are we doing here? You're a great defender, but when you're on offense, you're a black hole. And that's what Dyson Daniels has been. He's been a black hole offensively. So I really hope that he can somehow figure out how to shoot the basketball effectively, because there's absolutely no way he can play with Trae Young and be sitting in the short corner as a guard. Maybe they play him at a small forward or power forward position. He's experienced playing against power forwards, but I don't see this package being worth the DeJounte Murray. He, like Nathan mentioned, was one of the most clutch players in the league last year and is a great two-way player, arguably a top three two-way player in the league right now. So to have this package in return and not being able to get a guy like Trey Murphy or Herb Jones or even a better quality first-round pick is absurd for me and makes me just want to curl up in a ball and cry because Landry Fields has run this team to the ground.
Yeah, Hawks fans should have realized they were screwed when they got the number one pick for the first time the year in between Victor Wembanyama and Cooper Flagg.
Don't even get me started, Greg. Let's move on to the Hornets, though. Let's move off my pain and suffering.
Oh, what? No way.
Pain and suffering. So sixth overall, the Hornets draft to John Salon. And that is how you pronounce his name. I did look it up before we started here. It is to John Salon. And then in the second round, they got KJ Simpson from Colorado. So Gary, just give me your thoughts here about the Hornets draft. When players like Dalton Connect, Buzelis, Klingon, Edie even, were all available.
I'll talk about the pick. I'm not going to talk about who we get picked over because I'm going to get upset. I'll talk about Salon. Salon apparently is a pretty good, you know, two-way, long, small forward, power forward player. He played very, very briefly in France. When I say briefly, I don't mean like he only played 1 year. I mean like he barely got minutes in France. So it's hard, but it's especially smile, hard when one of the best rim protectors in the draft falls to you at number six. You got a horrible pick anyway. You got the sixth pick. One of the best rim protectors falls to you. Mark Williams already has injury problems, and you traded a 6'10 PJ Washington for a 6'5 Grant Williams. You needed rim protection. Donovan Klingon's right there. And we go with Tijon Salon from France. I don't know. I'm not going to hate on the kid until I watch him play. But it was so easy. I was like, clinging. Come on. Doesn't make sense. Okay. Connect. Dillingham. Buzelis. I don't care. Who? Let's just pick him. And Adam Silver walked his bald ass up there and said, Tijan Salon. I was just like, Alex, I just kind of stared at the TV until about the 17th or 18th pick. And I was like, wow.
Maybe you see Clifford got confused and thought he was getting his hair done or something. Going to the salon.
Oh my God.
Yeah, we're going salon. Yeah. I don't know. The KJ Simpson pickup really doesn't make sense to me either. He's a good young guard, I guess. Real small, though. That was the problem with him coming into the draft is it was his size, was his height. You know, that could be a guy who maybe a two-way contract you may see every once in a while, but that's not a guy who's going to compete even as a role player in the NBA. So it doesn't really make sense to me there either. Why not trade out of that? You're not looking to add anybody except maybe somewhere in free agency. I mean, you already just got Reggie Jackson. Sorry, just going to whole tangent. What are we doing?
All right, Nathan, let's move on to the Oklahoma City Thunder, who have had an amazing offseason thus far. Me and Gray cannot relate. You're letting Sam Presti cook up something pretty good. I would like to have him as my GM, but unfortunately, I have to deal with Landry Fields. So the Thunder end up drafting Nikola Topic, 12th overall. Topic probably won't end up playing his first year, coming off a torn ACL. I think it's Dylan Jones, 26th overall, after maneuvering some picks. And then get A.J. Mitchell in the second round with another trade there. But he's not done with there. After the draft, he went out and he re-signed Isaiah Joe to a four-year, $48 million contract, and then re-signed Aaron Wiggins to a five-year, $47 million contract.
He saved basketball, by the way. I don't know if you were aware of that. Aaron Wiggins saved basketball.
And then he went out and signed free agent center Isaiah Hartenstein to a three-year, $87 million contract, getting a pretty big need for the Thunder, a big man that can defend the paint, and really lacked that last season. So, Nathan, what are your thoughts on what Sam Presti has done with the Thunder thus far this offseason?
I just get to sit back and I don't even have to question my GM anymore. I just let Sam Presti do whatever he wants because he just knows he is like omniscient with what he knows. I just don't like it. Just works out. I don't understand how it does. I can't even question them anymore. The only thing is like the Josh Giddey pick looks bad now, but like let's be honest. I mean, Sam Presti with the number of wins he had, I mean,
you're gonna mess up once in a while
for the 1-1 Alex Caruso Josh Giddey trade. I'm like, so like, what did we do? To like, he must have drugged the Chicago Bulls before he traded with him or something. I'll talk about the draft for a minute. Nikola Topic, you know, before his ACL injury, he was looking to be a top five pick because he had so much potential. I still think he does have a lot of potential, but especially after the whole Chet Holmgren situation, not playing his first year because of his injury in that offseason prior, I think Sam Presti is a lot more comfortable with drafting someone and then having them not play the first year. Especially since he knows Popovich will be around the team and being able to have that first year of experience without even playing, it will be very, very beneficial. I think Popovich can be a really great player in the league. I think, especially with his finishing, looks a lot better. And he's a similar player to what Josh Giddey is, but he can just do everything more effectively in reality. And he has a lot more versatility. I would have been fine if that was our only pick, but like I like our aggressiveness. We traded 5 second round picks away to get the 26th overall pick, get a guy in Dylan Jones, who I was really impressed with coming out of Weber State. He can score at will. He provides a lot on the defensive end. He's really good with his on-ball defense, and I was very impressed with that. His shooting is it matches our play style, and I'm impressed with him. I'm excited to watch him play. And then we traded away Lindy Waters, who unfortunately was not going to be able to be with the team anymore. We need to clear out some roster spots. I'm glad to at least get him to a team that he can have a roster spot on. He's done a lot for the Thunder. I've always really enjoyed watching him play. But then getting a guy in A.J. Mitchell, who I think has a lot of potential, but he will probably be stashed in the G League and really being able to develop. And that's honestly just not a bad thing anymore. I mean, Sam Presti has done a great job with what he's been able to do, finding different hidden talents and being able to really develop them, whether that be in the NBA or the G League. But then to speak on re-signing Isaiah Joe and Aaron Wiggins, getting them on long-term deals, especially after watching them through the playoffs and in the last season, how much they provide as role players. Aaron Wiggins has just transformed into a guy who really is a great two-way player. I've liked the way he's played defense. He hustles around the court, but also his shooting's been there. And then, of course, Isaiah Joe, one of the best three-point shooters in the league. Can't really ask much more of him with what he's been able to do. But to get them on long-term deals means a lot to this team in the future of where the offense is. But then going and getting a guy in Isaiah Hartenstein in free agency, it really just allows us to shift the whole lineup around. Chet Holmgren having to play the five last season was really an uncomfortable position for him, having to go against bigger people than he is, especially in the strength category. Watching the series against the Pelicans, having him guard Jonas Valanciunas, it was not fair because of the size difference, although I think Chet did about what he could. But having Isaiah Hartenstein come in free agency allows Chet to shut down to his natural four position. Jalen Williams will be able to shut down to the three, and then Alex Caruso at the two, Shea at the one. Really sad defensive lineup. You talk about Shea. He's incredible on the defensive end. Alex Caruso, one of the best defenders in the league. Isaiah Hartenstein, one of the best center defenders in the league. Chet Holmgren, really great rim protector. And Jalen Williams has really stepped into his own as on the defensive end. Not to mention Lee Dort coming off the bench, Aaron Wiggins. It's stacked. I'm absolutely just thrilled to watch the scene next year. I don't know if Sam Presti's on or not, because he always has a trick up his sleeve. But so far I've been really impressed with what he's been able to do. I am impressed with what he did in the draft. I think that it will eventually pan out because he just knows more than I do. He knows more than everyone does.
But does he know more than Landry Fields?
I don't know. I think Landry Fields might be the smartest man alive.
I hope he is. And this all works out for him because Lord, right now,
how many more years do you give it, Alex, before you're no longer a Hawks fan?
He's already a year too long for me. So,
give it one more year and then you're done.
I've been done.
You've been done. So you're already removed from the Hawks.
Not as a fan, just from the current GM and management.
Okay. So what would it take to get you to choose to join another fandom of a different organization?
Landry Fields stays for 10 plus years.
Gosh, man, you're always sticking in there. You're a trooper. I guess Gray's been in there for a while too.
Yeah. No stopping now.
Ooh, Donovan Klingon.
That hole is so deep for Gray. I mean, he's still digging.
It's deep.
All right, as we kind of touched on earlier, the New York Knicks ended up trading five first round draft picks, a first round pick swap, a second round pick, and Bojan Bogdanovic to the Brooklyn Nets for just Mikal Bridges and a second round pick. And then they ended up after that re-signing OG Anunoby to a 5-year, $212.5 million contract to avoid him having him hit free agency. Guys, what are your thoughts on the Knicks going all in here and getting a guy like Mikal Bridges, but giving up basically their entire future?
Who are the Knicks? No, it's the Villanova Wildcats. this is a little weird. No, but all seriousness, the Knicks are all in with this, I want to say trio because I don't really want to put Josh Hart in there with.
What do you mean? He was like 20 rebounds.
Give Josh Hart some credit.
Yeah.
He's like 6'4".
We can include Josh Hart in there, but with Brunson, DiVincenzo, and Bridges, that is a lineup that is going to compete in the East. I think defensively, it's a bit of a concern. I think getting Mikal Bridges helps a lot, but losing a guy like Hartenstein, Jalen Brunson being as small as he is, I do have concerns about them on the defensive end. But they are all in. They traded six first round picks. I mean, this is massive. I don't know why the Hawks couldn't get that for DeJounte Murray.
Gosh, just stab out.
The stupid Landry fee.
I got two words why the Hawks didn't get that. It's somebody's name. Landry Fields.
Yeah. But I'm interested to see how this team molds together. You know, them all being a Villanova, them all knowing each other. Seeing how they mold with a guy like OG Anunoby, see what this new look Knicks team looks like. You know, because a few years ago, the Knicks thought they were going to have Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant.
And Zion.
And Zion. Yeah, that's right. Look where they're at now. but I do think they're one of the upper teams in the East, just because the East sucks. But I don't know if I'm incredibly sold on them yet, but to have talent like Jalen Brunson, like DiVincenzo, like Mikal Bridges, like those guys in the room, that's a big deal. You know, for the Nets, I mean, talk about a reload. You know, we thought they were reloading, you know, a couple of years ago when they got rid of Kevin Durant and all them. Now is their reload. With all these first round picks, now it's going to be about picking the right people. You know, we saw the Thunder do this, you know, 5-6 years ago, and it has worked for the Thunder now. It has worked for Sam Presti. Can the Nets pick the right people, not best players? Can the Nets pick the right people for the Nets to fit into that team and mold a team just like the Thunder have? I doubt it, but we'll see.
Wow. I mean, great. You left off the most important player in the Knicks history, Julius Randle, the best player on the Knicks currently. Gosh, all jokes aside, I mean, Mikal Bridges, I think back to his time in Phoenix and what he was able to do there, and then having him being traded away to the Nets, and just, I don't think his time as the number one overall option on the Nets really worked out. I feel like it was a unnatural position for him, but then to have him traded to the Knicks to where he can kind of take a backseat and really play more into his role, like he was with on the Suns, I think that would be very beneficial for the Knicks, especially in the future. Jalen Brunson, of course, I think everyone has their concerns for him defensively just because of his height. It's the same situation with Trae Young. But I think you look at his offensive output and what he's been able to do. I mean, what he was, if you look at like national scoring, I think he led like the United States in like point average. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty crazy for a guy of his stature to be able to put up that many points. So I don't think there's as much concern. And then you bring in the guy like Mikal Bridges, who really picks it up on the defensive end. You talk about what Josh Hart's been able to do, the amount of hustle he brings. Josh Hart and Aaron Wiggins are very similar players in my eyes. Josh Hart's obviously a little bit better just because
of experience.
I mean, yeah, his rebounding is crazy. But like I do think like the biggest concern now, you just look at Knicks and the lack of rim protection with Hartenstein being lost in free agency. So what do you do about that? I mean, obviously you can't really rely on Randle to carry the team on boards or anything defensively, or to do anything productive in that matter. So that's going to be the biggest issue for the Knicks, what they decide to do there. Whether they try to be aggressive in free agency and try to get a new center on a contract, if they try to make another trade, because really that's the only piece they're missing in my eyes. Dante DiVincenzo, very good defensive player. He's good in the offensive end too. So it's not like they lack the output on the offensive or defensive end. It's just going to come down to rebounding in my eyes and how much depth they have. They can be a really good team in the East. The East is not this just super conference where you have to play so many different great teams. It's really just a cupcake walk. And you look at the Celtics and what they had to do. I mean, not much contest for that first spot in the East, besides the Bucks and whatever they decided to do. Doc Rivers. that basically sums it up right there. But the Knicks can be one of those top teams in the conference again. It's just going to come down to what they do the rest of this free agency period and what they do the rest of the offseason.
I think Tom Thibodeau is absolutely thrilled to have a guy like Mikal Bridges on his team. Mikal Bridges hasn't missed a game since high school. So it's going to be a battle of who gives out first, Tom Thibodeau or Mikal Bridges. Any bets on who gives out first?
I don't know. Tom Thibodeau makes so many people quit. He's just that type of coach. But Mikal Bridges not having missed a game since high school, I mean, that takes a lot. Gosh, I mean, honestly, it's like flipping a coin. But I'd probably
like going 3 or 4 years in college too. It's not like
that's true. One and done. So I'd probably go Mikal Bridges then.
I would as well. Yeah.
All right. Another team here in the Eastern Conference made some big moves this offseason. The Philadelphia 76ers signed free agent Paul George to a 4-year, $212 million maximum contract, then re-signed Tyrese Maxey to a 4-year, $204 million maximum contract. They made some other signings in free agents. They brought in Andre Drummond and Eric Gordon, re-signed Kelly Oubre.
They didn't end up losing the last two, Alex.
I think it was necessary. And they ended up losing the best player on the roster, Tobias Harris.
Oh, to the Detroit Pistons, no.
he signed there.
Killian Hayes.
So, looking at all those signings they've done, Paul George, getting Andre Drummond, Eric Gordon, re-signing Kelly Oubre, Tyrese Maxey, do the Sixers get over the hump this season and make the conference finals for the first time since 2001?
Nope. I still think that hump is Boston. And no. Absolutely not. There's something blocking them towards the conference
barriers,
though. It's Joel Embiid. It's insane. It may be the process.
Ooh, Ben Simmons. Ooh. The ghost of Ben Simmons haunting the 76ers.
They'll forever never forget that layup he passed up on Trae Young.
Gosh. He was right there. Oh my god!
And then giving up on the Kawhi Leonard three. Too. If you ever watch that Kawhi Leonard game winning 3-pointer, he gives up halfway through the play.
Yeah.
So,
so I would say, you know, with the Kelly Oubre re-sign, with getting Paul George, with getting, you know, Drummond Gordon. Goodness gracious, this is in 2009. I think the biggest thing for Philadelphia is actually a bad thing, and losing Tobias Harris is going to be bad. That's going to be very, very bad. Poor guy's on the Pistons now, but this is free agency. He went there. It was his choice. I don't know why. He did that to himself. But losing him on this 76ers team is going to be a problem, especially late in the year, especially when you get into the playoffs, when you need a veteran shooter like that. I don't know how reliable Paul George is going to be. As much as Tobias Harris was, I think Tobias Harris was more of a spot up guy relative to Paul George. I feel like Paul George can create a little bit better, but I don't think you need that with a guy like Tyrese Maxey. I think he's the guy that needs to have the ball in his hands. So I'm interested to see how this fits, but I don't trust it.
First of all, I'm just going to go ahead and address the elephant in the room. Clippers, Paul George making that trade. Wow.
Oh God.
I mean,
did the Thunder win?
I don't know. Alex, you tell me. I mean, the Clippers don't have that player anymore, and they lost a pretty much MVP caliber player in Jay and a bunch of picks. So yeah,
I can read off to you, Nathan, if you want me to remind you.
Yeah, go ahead and read it off.
So you got the Thunder received Shea, Danilo Gallinari, a 2021 first that turned into Trey Mann, who is gone now. 2022 first that turned into Jalen Williams. 2023 first round swap. 2024 first round pick. 2025 first round pick. 2025 first round swap. And 2026 first round pick. For Paul George, that was it. There wasn't like any additional thing for the Clippers.
Wow. To be fair, I mean, Paul George was coming off being an MVP runner-up at the time, but
yeah,
I mean, you should have seen the signs. So, and this will get into my other point with what's going to be wrong with the 76ers, but just for the Clippers to look like idiots for more than a minute, I don't know, part of me wish Sam Presti would have just went and signed Paul George back to just completely embarrass the Clippers one last time. I don't know. It would have been funny, but it wouldn't have been like a great move. Now to address the 76ers situation, they've made a lot of moves, and they have basically said, if we don't win the next 3 to 4 years, then we're going to end up having to blow it up. Because, I mean, how long can you keep Joel Embiid on that contract? How long are you going to have enough cap space to go and pair him with superstars? I mean, you already went through the whole James Harden experience and it just didn't work out. You got to Ben Simmons. That didn't work out. It's just this mountain that you can't get over. You can't just get to the Eastern Conference Finals and you can't get to the finals. You can't have this type of postseason success. You look like one of the best teams in the regular season and just you fall apart. Joel Embiid's been the most ball dominant player in the league for some time now. That's why he averaged close to 35 points this season. And I look at Tyrese Maxey and how much usage he got, especially while Joel Embiid was hurt. And now you're going to have to feed another head and Paul George. Well, I think back to OKC when Paul George and Russell Westbrook were paired together, both of them very, very, very ball dominant. And one had to take a back seat. Russell Westbrook pretty much had to take a back seat to Paul George that season. Joel Embiid's not going to do that. And can we expect Paul George to be comfortable in the role of just being that second or maybe even third option on the 76ers? I don't see it. Paul George has never been that guy where he's just off ball. Even, you know, looking back to, you know, the Clippers past few years with James Harden, I mean, he worked as a decent number two option. Kawhi Leonard really isn't that effective on the offensive end as he once was. But I really think James Harden deferred more times than not to Paul George. So let him be that number one option. That's just not going to happen on the 76ers. So there's only one basketball on the court and too many mouths to feed at this point. And I also worry about the facilitating, especially at Tyrese Maxey. Can we rely on him to be a great facilitator like you see on many of these championship winning teams? I think that's going to be a big thing looking forward for the 76ers. And then you go into the whole role player aspect. Can you have reliable 3-and-D guys on your team? I know you talked about losing Tobias Harris. It's all a big joke and all, but Tobias Harris is a very good veteran guy who is a very similar to a 3-and-D type build. And I think you look at some of the other pickups, you look at Aaron Gordon, sure, he'd be that guy. Andre Drummond, I think that's just flat out stupid and a waste of money. And you're kind of just wasting your time with filling roster spots that really could have been used towards guys to fit better roles on your team. And that's just going to be my main concern. Not enough depth where you need it. And then the lack of facilitating and too many heads to feed. And that's why I don't think the 76ers will be able to give her that hump, especially with the way that Boston has been playing recently. I mean, they pretty much just walked their way through the East this year. They have a stacked team. They're very good depth wise. And then you look at what the Knicks have been able to do. I mean, they're on the up and up. You have other teams just being able to recruit. To just get people in free agency and make these great trades to just go ahead and set themselves up for the future. How much longer do the 76ers have until they have to say, look, we got to go back into the process again? It's just been a whole episode. And I don't say it's all on Joel Embiid, but he has been very selfish in the way he's played basketball for the 76ers. And if he doesn't continue, if he continues to play like that, then the 76ers will never have any postseason success like they want to, because of the way he's more concerned with personalized awards like the MVP.
So when it comes to the Sixers, it's can they stay healthy? Embiid has dealt with injuries the past few years. Last season, he dealt with some pretty bad knee injuries. Paul George, injury prone as well. He dealt with injuries during his time with the Clippers. Maxey, knock on wood, hasn't dealt with a lot of injuries in his career.
Oh, there it goes.
Can Embiid and George stay healthy? Can they power through this Eastern Conference, which, as we've all touched on, is going to be much more difficult to get through next season? The Knicks have really improved. The Celtics are going to be very difficult to get through no matter what. The Pacers, I mean, they proved they're a force in the East. The Bucks hopefully will be healthy again with Giannis and Dame and Chris Middleton. Can they make a run? I know Doc Rivers is their head coach, but they cannot Giannis and Dame. The Orlando Magic had made moves in the offseason. I mean, this isn't a cakewalk like it kind of was last season. I mean, the Celtics basically sleptwalked to the finals, and then they kind of sleptwalked in the finals a little bit.
The right team wasn't there, so. Stupid PJ Washington. This is all on your fault, Gray.
Hey, we got Pigeon Salon.
You also got Grant Williams. Exactly. Did play for Tennessee. What do you think y'all were doing?
That is true.
So I think if Embiid and George and Maxey can stay healthy and they can fit together like the puzzle pieces Daryl Moore thinks they're going to be, then I think they make it to the conference finals. But do I think they beat somebody like the Boston Celtics? Probably not. That team is really well constructed, have really good perimeter defenders, really good interior guys, very good depth. And I just don't think the Sixers have what they need to have to get past that team. I think the Knicks might give them a run for their money, because the Knicks are going to get out and run, and Embiid's not really going to get out and run with you. He's not a run up and down the court type guy.
Especially after his injuries. I mean, he's not been the same.
And Paul George is not spry either. He's 34 years old. So I know Maxie's going to want to run, but is he going to have the pieces around to run with him? There are some other moves this offseason. The Boston Celtics re-signed Jason Tatum to a five-year, $315 million Supermax contract, the largest in NBA history, surpassing Jaylen Brown, who signed a five-year, $285 million Supermax last offseason. They also re-signed Derek White to a four-year, $125 million contract.
How much money do they got?
They're just throwing money at the wall.
Holy cow.
It's funny because they throw all this money at these players and the owner is selling the team. Yeah. So obviously he's trying to get out while he can. But the Celtics have secured basically their future. Jason Tatum's locked in. Jaylen Brown's locked in. Derek White, Drew Holiday, I believe, is Kristaps Porzingis. So their core is locked in for the future under contract. So there's no worry that somebody's going to walk in for agency or anything. Klay Thompson will join the Dallas Mavericks on a three-year, $50 million contract. That'll involve a three-team trade. And the Mavericks are going to send the Hornets good old Josh Green, Gray.
The best move yet this offseason.
The Dallas Mavericks also traded Tim Hardaway Jr. and 3 second-round picks to Detroit Pistons.
Oh, yeah.
For Quentin Grimes. And they also ended up signing Najee Marshall to a three-year, $27 million contract, inevitably replacing Derrick Jones Jr., who ended up signing with the Los Angeles Clippers on a three-year, $30 million contract. And the Clippers also re-signed James Harden to a two-year, $70 million contract. The Toronto Raptors signed Scottie Barnes to a five-year maximum rookie extension and then re-signed Manuel Quickley to a five-year, $175 million contract. The Denver Nuggets traded Reggie Jackson and three unprotected second-round picks to the Charlotte Hornets just to free up cap space. The Hornets didn't send anything back in return, I don't believe. And then they are working to re-sign Jamal Murray to a four-year, $209 million contract extension. Chicago Bulls re-signed famed fourth overall pick Patrick Williams to a five-year, $90 million contract, and then signed free agent Jalen Smith to a three-year, $27 million contract. Washington Wizards ended up trading Denny Avdija to the Portland Trailblazers for Malcolm Brogdon, the 14th overall pick, which was Bob Carrington, a 2029 first-round pick, a 2028 second-round pick, and a 2030 second round pick to the Wizards. And they also, the Wizards ended up signing free agent Jonas Valanciunas to a 3 year, $30 million contract. Thought that was a little weird for Valanciunas to go there.
Yeah.
The Golden State Warriors waived Chris Paul, and he now plans to sign with the San Antonio Spurs on a 1 year, $11 million contract, pairing up with Wemby. And then the Warriors signed De'Anthony Melton to a 1 year, $12.8 million contract. The Detroit Pistons re-signed Cade Cunningham to a five-year, $226 million maximum rookie extension. Orlando Magic signed free agent Kentavious Caldwell-Pope to a three-year, $66 million contract. So one more trade here is the Kings trade Davion Mitchell and Sasha Vinskov and the 45th overall pick, which ended up being Jamal Shedd to the Toronto Raptors for Jalen McDaniels, effectively clearing cap space. The Knicks re-signed Nick Claxton to a four-year, $100 million contract. Suns re-signed Royce O'Neal. Pacers re-signed Obi Toppin. Lakers re-signed Max Christie. Heat re-signed Kevin Love. Utah Jazz signed free agent Drew Eubanks. And the Rockets re-signed Aaron Holiday. And the last thing, the Milwaukee Bucks signed free agent DeLon Wright to a one-year, $3.3 million contract. So, guys, looking at this offseason thus far, who do you think's had the best one?
Ooh, that's tough, honestly.
That is a tough one. I don't think one specific team has completely blown us away with, you know, two or three crazy moves, even if you consider the draft. I don't think there's been like the one or two teams that have really taken over. You know, just like you mentioned early in that session there, Alex, when the Boston Celtics locking down their core, you know, giving Tatum that supermax, locking down Derek White because he was outstanding during the playoffs this past year. I think that's very important. Coming off a championship year, you know, we've seen championship teams in the past kind of scatter and move elsewhere, and these guys try and take different quote unquote challenges and stuff like that and go somewhere else or want to play with different people after they've won a championship. I think the Celtics locking down their core and basically solidifying themselves as the best team in the East, you know, again, during this offseason, has been the biggest thing, because I don't think there's been a middle of the pack or lower tier team that's shot up the radar just yet. So I'll go with the Celtics. I think them locking it down and being the best team in the East is huge.
You know, it's Thunder. It's easy to be biased and say it's the Thunder. And why do you think? I think we probably have had the best offseason of any team thus far, just because of what we've been able to do through trading and then, of course, free agency. I look at a team who I was very impressed with on draft night, and you'll never catch me saying this again because I hate this team very much. But what the Minnesota Timberwolves were able to do on draft night, I think was very impressive. Getting a guy in Rob Dillingham, which I think will have a very great future in the league. It really made me question what the Spurs were doing, because I thought Rob Dillingham was going to be a great fit for them. But then, you know, going and getting Chris Paul, which I think will be a great move in and of itself. But I was really impressed by what the Timberwolves have been able to do to really improve their future, continuing to get these young guys who will develop into some great role players, I think. And who knows what Rob Dillingham will become. But based off where the Timberwolves were last season and where they currently will be next season, I think will be pretty much the same spot. I don't know how much longer they'll keep a guy in Rudy Gobert, or they decide to move Karl Anthony Towns, because I think that's the biggest question mark is with their front court. But with what they've been able to do with guard development, especially with what Anthony Edwards has been, I think they've done a great job this offseason. And I'll give them a lot of credit, but I don't like them.
I was going to say the Timberwolves, too. I think they did an amazing job in the draft getting Dillingham and Terrence Shannon Jr. So I got to get it to the Timberwolves to have the best offseason thus far. But there is a lot of offseason left, a lot of signings to happen. DeMar DeRozan's a free agent. LeBron's a free agent. There's a host of other free
LeBron's
agents.
Yeah, LeBron's a free agent. Woo, I wonder where he's going.
All right, it's all time you have for today. Thank you for listening and watching Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.